Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 12, Chapter entitled Creation of Kumaras and Others. Text number 24 and 25. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Palasya was generated from the ears, Angira from the mouth, Atri from the eyes, Marichi from the mind, and Pulaha from the navel of Brahma. Translation responsibly. Palasya was generated from the ears. Angira from the mouth. Atri from the eyes. Marichi from the mind. And Pulaha from the navel of Brahma. Text 25. Religion was manifested from the breast of Brahma, wherein seated the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Wherein is seated the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. And irreligion appeared from his back, where horrible death takes place for the living entity. Purport. That religion was manifested from the place where the Personality of Godhead is personally situated is very significant, because religion means devotional service to the Personality of Godhead, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita as well as the Bhagavatam. In Bhagavad Gita, the last instruction is to give up all other engagements in the name of religion and take shelter of the Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam also confirms that the highest perfection of religion is that which leads to the devotional service of the Lord, unmotivated and unhampered by material impediments. Religion, in its perfect form, is the devotional service of the Lord, and irreligion is just the opposite. The heart is the most important part of the body, whereas the back is the most neglected part. When one is attacked by an enemy, one is apt to endure attacks from the back and protect himself carefully from all attacks on the chest. All types of irreligion spring from the back of Brahma, whereas real religion, the devotional service of the Lord, is generated from the chest, the seat of Narayana. Anything which does not lead to the devotional service of the Lord is irreligion, and anything which leads to the devotional service of the Lord is called religion. Omagyan timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapatantikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's a very interesting section of the Bhagavatam. I was just looking ahead, a few verses. It's a very interesting section. I haven't read this for a long time, but there's a lot of powerful instructions in this section. We're seeing that this is creation. And we've mentioned previously, this topic of creation is described three times in this canto. This is the first of the descriptions. So it's an elaborate description of creation. In other places, creation is simplistic. In other places, other texts on the earth, there's a simplistic. These days, creationism has become unpopular. It's been replaced by atheism. The doctrine of the earth at this point in time is basically atheism. Krishna describes this in the Gita in chapter 16. What is chapter 16 called? Divine and demoniac nature. So basically you divide everyone on this earth, every human being, into two categories. Either you're divine or you're demoniac. You're Asura or Asura. Now what is the definition of Asura? It means you are atheistic. That means you do not believe in God. So this is popular these days. And because people do not believe in God, the doctrine which supports that at this point in time is evolution. They've taken this as the philosophy to substantiate their beliefs. That we did not come from a God, from a creator. We evolved through natural selection and different things. They have all sorts of explanations for it. But it's an interesting doctrine because it's not proven. That's the point. And the father of the doctrine, who wrote the doctrine a little over 150 years ago, he says himself in the... what's it called, the doctrine? Is it evolution of the species? Or? Yeah. Origin of the species. Sorry, yeah. Origin of the species, yeah. Thank you. So origin of the species, he says in the original book, he says the theory as it stands cannot be substantiated. He says it himself. It's not proven. It wasn't proven when he was there, and it's not substantially proven now. Even though they say, you know, they find a butterfly which is turning from blue to green, and they say, oh, look, that's evolution. You know, they're the kind of things that they bring to us. But there's no substantial truth. It's not substantiated. There's no missing link coming out of the ground. You know, if there were missing links, if there was monkeys turning into men, which is what the theory says, you would be finding the halfling, you know, the in between the monkey and the man, you'd be finding it in the crust of the earth all over the place. You know, they're digging up fossil evidence, they'd be finding it everywhere. You know, this missing link would be there, it would be substantiated, but it's not substantiated because it doesn't exist. That's the point. And interestingly, is that they find, if you look into the books of Trutakarma Prabhu, like, what's it called? Forbidden Archaeology and these other books, there's archaeological evidence all the time coming out of the earth which substantiates a civilized civilization going back millions of years. Even recently, it's been on the news recently, they found some artifacts in Kenya where the carbon dated at 3 million years old or something like that. And the scientists are saying they're quite obviously made by intelligent beings. You know, they're like, you know, some rocks, you know, like some knives and things like that, which are coming out, which have been carved, right? And the carbon date. So once again, it defuncts their theory again and again and again. So the theory cannot be claimed, cannot be proven. And on the other hand, the theory can be substantiated the other way more often than not. So basically, people on the earth in this point in time, they are atheistic. That is called Asura. And when you're an Asura and you're atheistic, you believe there's no creator. But we are the opposite. We are creationists. We believe that everything was created by an intelligent being. That is called intelligent design. And there's a lot of evidence to support it if we go into it intellectually. We can't prove it. There's no proof. Empirically, we cannot prove it. Right? We can't prove that there's a Mahavishnu. We can't prove that there's a Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. Right? If you look into the bottom of this universe, right, if you had the eyes to see, you would see there is a huge Vishnu lying there on the Garbhodaka ocean, and from his navel is coming the lotus stem, and on the top of the lotus stem is Brahma and his planet, which is called Satyaloka, and the 14 planetary systems are within that area of the Milky Way as it goes up. Prabhupada says in the, is it second canto? He says that the Milky Way is the lotus stem, which is coming from the navel of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu and is going to Brahma Loka. Just like the other day at the farm, because Amavasya is in a couple of days, so the moon is dark at the moment, so when the sun goes down, the moon is not present. So The other night, I could see the farm was clear, and I could see the Milky Way very clearly. It's like a gaseous kind of whitish kind of thread which goes all the way across the sky. Right? So that's the lotus stem of Brahma. And it says the different planetary systems are surrounding that. But we can't prove these things empirically, scientifically. We can't say this is, but it's a matter of belief, or it's a matter of shraddha or faith. Right? So do you have faith in science, or do you have faith in creation? So which one do you believe in? So we believe in creation. We're creationists. We believe there's a creator. But when it's described by all of the other philosophies and religions around the planet, it's a very simplistic version of creation. Right? You look in the Bible, how does it describe creation? It happens in 7 days. It actually happens in 6 days. And on the seventh day, God's really, really tired. So he has a rest. So that's why on Sunday it's considered a day of rest. People won't do things. Traditionally, Christians, they would not work on the Sunday because it's a Sabbath. It's a day where God rested, so we also should rest. But that's a very simplistic version of creation. God doesn't need to rest. Why doesn't he need to rest? Yeah, because he never gets tired. He never gets tired. Why is he after rest? It's not like, he was building everything. It's not like, he was, making the earth, and then he made Jupiter, and then he made Saturn, and then he got the sun. Oh, that was really hot, So it's like, and he's, he's making all this. It wasn't like he's doing it like that. He does it by his Shakti. It says in the Gita, Mayad Yakshina Prakriti, Surati, Sacharachara. And see, just by his glance, he just looks and everything manifests. So it is effortless for him. The entire creation takes nothing. So we are creationists, and in this part of the Bhagavatam, creation is being described in great detail. And it's very interesting how the creation is being described. So, at this point, we're hearing about the creation of the sages. There are a number of sages which have been created. We've just heard about the creation of Rudra, or Shiva, as he appears. And now, we're hearing about the creation of, or the manifestation of, different qualities. And it says where these qualities, symbolically, which part of the body of the Lord or Brahma they come from. So in this verse, we hear about Dharma and Adharma. So where does Dharma come from? Where does it say, where does Dharma come from? Yeah, from the chest. Manifest from in here, this part. This is our good part. This is the goodness in us. It means the feelings, the soul is actually situated here. The feelings emanating from the soul are manifested from here. So everything is coming from there. And then Adharma. Adharma means irreligion, that's coming from the back. Forbidden activities. So this is coming from the back of the Lord. And death is also coming from the back of the Lord. So we are seeing these different things that are manifesting. And then it describes in the next verse, I was just looking at it, it says where lust and anger and these things come from. And interesting, guess where it says lust comes from? You just look at the next verse, it'll tell you. Where does it come? Same place, chest. Interesting. Analyze that. That bhakti is coming from there, religion is coming there, and also lust is coming from there. It's very interesting. Right? And then after this, after it describes that, then I was just looking ahead, then we're going to hear about the creation of Vak. Vak is the daughter of Brahma. Very interesting pastime in this section of the Bhagavatam. Brahma becomes attracted to his daughter, Vak. Vak means beautiful speech. So he gives birth to a daughter. She's beautiful because he's Brahma. He's also Brahma is extremely beautiful. So he gives birth to a beautiful daughter, and then he becomes attracted to her to teach us a lesson about this material creation, the danger of this material creation, the danger of Maya. It's a very interesting section, which is coming up in the next. So lust is coming from the chest, from the heart. So lust means the desire to be separate from God. Now, interesting, Prabhupada says, public enemy number one. Prabhupada writes some letters. And he says, concerning public enemy number one. Who is public enemy number one? Huh? Is it Saddam Hussein? Is it, what was the other guy that they killed? Osama bin Laden? Whether or not they actually killed him or not. But they said they killed him. And they made a movie about it. But whether or not. Anyway, I could go into a lot of things. But, or they say George Bush, he's public enemy number one. Or now they say Barack Obama. And interesting, because America gets carried away with everything. Right? If you haven't noticed, America's always, So their political elections are taking place. When's the election? It's next September. It's all now. So it takes them 18 months just to work out who's going to run the country. You know, they carry on for 18 months and spend billions of dollars on advertising and propaganda. And it looks like it's going to be a face-off between Donald Trump, right, who's a billionaire. Looks like he's going to run for the Republican Party. We'll see when it gets closer who actually. And Hillary Clinton, who's massively popular. So it looks like, we don't know yet, we'll see who actually gets goes to the primaries. And then we'll see. So, you could say these people are the public enemy number one. You know, what they're going to do to the earth if they get in control of these people. They're very good people in one sense, but because of ignorance, they're going to make some choices, as the present government is doing, which is very detrimental to the earth. Which is based on destroying the earth, which is actually demoniac, because they don't understand. They're good people in heart, but they make massive mistakes because of being covered by the modes of passion and ignorance. So it says, Prabhupada says, public enemy number one is not this person or that person, it is Mr. Lust. Lust is the greatest enemy of the soul. Krishna says this in the third chapter of the Gita. At the end of the third chapter, he says, what is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this planet? Right? It is lust. Kama Esha, Krota Esha, Rajaguno Samudbhava. Right? It is calm, it is lust. Now what is lust? Right? Lust is the desire to enjoy separately from God. Kam Endriya Priti is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Kama Indriya. Indriya. Indriya means your senses. Whenever you use your senses for something other than Krishna's service, by definition that is kam. That is lust. Atmendriya Priti. Now that is the definition of kam. That's what the CC said. Atmendriya Priti. Atma Indriya. Atma means your senses. Atma Indriya. That is the definition of kam. When you are using your senses in the service of yourself, that is lust. And Krishnendriya Priti. That is the definition of prema, which is being spoken of here. This is coming from our heart. So lust and prema, right, kam and prema, they come from the same place, from our heart. At this point in time, because we are identifying with the false ego and we're covered by the material energy, then it comes out as lust. Right? That feeling, that original love for Krishna becomes distorted. Originally, it's our love for Krishna. We become attached to this and we become attached to, because originally we were attached to Krishna. But then due to false ego, then that love for Krishna comes out as attachment to other things and other objects. And it is meant for my pleasure, and that becomes lust. So all of us are battling with lust. Hands up if you are battling with lust. Oh God, you are in trouble. I pray to Radha Balaba for you. Radha Balaba, please help all of these devotees. They are battling with lust. Because Prabhupada says it is public enemy number one. It is the problem all of us have got. There's no other problem. It's just lust. We want to be separate from Krishna. Right? And then we blame everything else except ourselves. We said, oh, that made me do it, and that made me do it. Just like in America, they had a big evangelistic Christian, like born again Christian minister. I think his name was it Jimmy Swagger? Or, there's some of these guys, they're huge. Like they're so popular. And in America, they have TV shows. Like the Sunday morning mass, it's on television. I mean, like millions of people watch this. Like, these guys are huge. They're like, you know, huge guys. So I think it was, I can't remember which one it was, but he was super popular. This is about 10 or 20 years ago. So, you know, everyone watches him on Sunday morning. It's like a football stadium. People come for the mass and then people watch on television. It's huge. So then, during the week, he got caught with a prostitute. You know, because of lust. Because, you know, he had lust in the heart, so he went out looking for a prostitute. So he went to a prostitute, but she was an undercover police officer, a cop. Right? And he said, you know, can I book your services? And she said, sure. And she pulled out her badge. And he said, whoa, you know, big problem. So then he was taken in, right? It's all over the newspaper, all over the media. He's been caught like that. So then he comes to Sunday, and then he comes onto the television. You know, and then everyone's there, thousands, and everyone's waiting. You know, what's he going to say? And he walked out, and he started crying, and he said, the devil made me do it. The devil made me do it. And everyone started crying, you know, and the whole audience was crying, everyone's going. And he said, and if you really believe that the devil made me do it, then send money in now. Right? Because at the end of the show, every show, they ask for money. For donations. And on that day, he got the most he ever got. Millions of bucks. Everyone sent in. Because the devil made me do it. It wasn't the devil, it was lust. Yeah, because what happens is that when we fall down to sense gratification, we blame everything else except the actual problem. What's the actual problem? It's us. It's not anyone else. Right? We choose to be separate from Krishna. It's a choice that we make every day. We choose to be separate from Krishna. That's what lust is by definition. That's what it means to be an asura, to be an atheist. It means we don't want to serve Krishna. If Krishna walked in here, if Krishna got off the altar right now and walked into this, you know, kirtan mandap, into this part of the temple, and said, okay, who wants to come back? Right? And if he actually showed us like what's in our heart, you know, I don't know if we would actually fully surrender at this point. Because we still have anartha, we still have things that we're holding on to very tightly. And these things have to be removed. And actually, the philosophy of the Bhagavatam teaches us that if you are sincere, if you really want to go back to Krishna, because all of us do, we want to go back to Krishna, but we're actually unable to by our own efforts. But if we just sincerely continue to serve Krishna, Krishna will remove the obstacles in our heart. Only Krishna can do it, actually. He'll make arrangements and change your consciousness and give you realizations and dismantle your life and your false ego so that you can surrender to him eventually. And Prabhupada says that in the first canto, second chapter, in the purport for, it's either Srimvatam Swakata Krishna or Nashta Prayeshva Bhadrisha. It's in one of the two purports. I think it might be Nashta Prayeshva Bhadrisha. And Prabhupada says that if the devotee is sincere, then Krishna will remove the obstacles. But we have to be sincere. We have to just stick to the path of bhakti. Right? If you stick to the path, then eventually Krishna will take away those obstacles. He will remove the lust, eventually. But we just have to stick to it. Because it's beyond us to do it ourselves. We cannot do it ourselves. We cannot remove all the anarthas, all the obstacles on our own behalf. So, it says here that the back of the Lord, or the back of Brahma, is irreligion. And it says here, where horrible death takes place for the living entity. So this is described in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, and it's also described in the Madhurya Kanambini by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. When we get covered by the material energy, we're covered by five types of ignorance. What are those five types of ignorance? It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam itself, actually. What are the five? What is that? Yeah. Yeah, it says raga, dvesha, avijja, asmita, and what's the other one? There's five types of ignorance which cover the soul. It's actually described in Kapila's teachings also. And Patanjali in the Yoga Sutras, it's very heavily emphasized. So asmita means fear of death. Everyone in the material world has a fear of death. And it's interesting, where does this come from, this fear of death? Right? It comes from the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. I was reading recently, I think it's Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur was explaining, one of the acharyas is explaining. When you're attached to pious or sinful activity, then it substantiates the false ego. So it's the same point about lust, right? It's an enjoying spirit that we have. When you want to enjoy separately from Krishna, then what takes place? Right? By wanting to enjoy separately from Krishna, you become attached to pious activity and sinful activity. Right? One or the other, or both. Right? So all of us are attached to pious or sinful activity. And when you become attached to pious or sinful activity, it means that you will also develop a fear of death. You become scared. Why are we scared of death? Right? If you analyze it. Because asmita, all of us are fearful of death. I know I am. I was driving down the road to come here to the temple from the farm, and one big truck, sometimes they change lanes, right? And I know one devotee, they changed lane and actually hit the car, and damaged the car. So the guy changed the lane. It was like, if I hadn't have been watching and moved back, he probably would have hit my car. And we're driving 100 kilometres an hour, and I could have spun off the highway and flipped over the bridge and gone into the paddock and hit someone's house. I don't know what might have happened. But it's fearful. And suddenly I felt fearful. As I thought just in that moment, something could happen here. And then just fear. It's like, oh my God, my body's going to be hurt. I could die. Like that. So it's asmita, it's a fear of death. Now why is it there? Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says it's there because we are attached to enjoying pious and sinful activities. Why are we attached to the body? Because we need the body to fulfill our desires. Just like some people, they get haunted by ghosts. Bhutas. Now what does a bhuta do? He tries to get into your body. Why does he want to get into your body? Because he needs a body to fulfill his desires. So then he haunts another person. He takes their body, possesses them, and he can use their body for what he wants to do. So we are attached to this material body. We want to enjoy it, right? Either piously or impiously. Sinful activities or pious activities. And because we want to enjoy, then we become attached to it. And then we become fearful of death. So how do we overcome our fear of death? Yeah, ultimately, devotional service. But how do we overcome our fear of death? What is it? Yeah, that's good. Knowledge or atonement. And we have to give up the desire to enjoy piously or impiously. Right? To enjoy the body separately from Krishna. When you give up that effect, then you don't have attachment to the body. You don't need the body. We're attached to the body now because we have desires. Just like you're thinking now, what can you have for breakfast? You have desires. So when you have all these desires, then you become attached to the body and then you get fear. That's a concomitant factor to being attached to the body. But once you become detached from the body, then there is no fear. Just like you see Prabhupada in the final days that he was on this planet. His body was emaciated. If you see in the footage of Prabhupada at the end, his body was it was completely finished. And actually, the Kaviraj said that Prabhupada could not be maintaining life in that body in those final days. It was not possible. Because the pain would have been excruciating, because his kidneys had failed. Right? So the amount of pain that would have been in that body, all of us just would have left the body. It would have been too much. But Prabhupada sustained, because there was detachment from the body. He didn't think he was that body. So when you get to that point, then you release attachment to the body. You see it as a yantra or a machine,
not as you.
And then Prabhupada said to all of us, what did he say in those final days? He said, don't think this won't happen to you. We all think it's not going to happen to us. It'll happen to everyone else. But it doesn't happen to us. We don't die. But the fact is, it's going to happen to every one of us. The body will dismantle. So our whole lives is a preparation for that time. What is all the sadhana we are doing for? Why do you chant 16 rounds every day? Why do you follow the four regulative principles? Why do you get up for Mangal Aarti? Why do you do it? Why do you do all these things? You're preparing yourself for death. Right? We have to ingrain Krishna so much into our consciousness that at the time of death we will take shelter of Krishna. It's a practice. We have to practice our whole lives. Right? Thinking of Krishna. Krishna says, always remember me, never forget me. That is the overriding principle of Krishna consciousness. Mamana bhavamad bhakto. Actually, that's the rahasya of the whole Gita. Right? Krishna says, mamana, just think of me. That's the entire teaching of the whole Gita. Right? So we have to design our consciousness or prepare our consciousness in such a way that we take shelter of Krishna. Krishna ashraya. That we're taking shelter of Krishna in our mind, in our heart, so that when we pass away, we won't be attached to the body, we'll be attached to Krishna. So that is the purpose of our sadhana. That's what we're practicing for. And at the time of death, Krishna has to be completely in your heart, in your mind. Nice example is given, just like a woman, if you go to India, you'll see in Jatipur, if you go to the village of Jatipur at Govardhan Hill. Does anyone know the village I'm talking about? Jatipur. If you go to Govardhan Hill, you know Govardhan Hill. And then there's one village called Jatipur. Or there's another village called Aniyur. So you know that village, Aniyur. So they don't have running water in that village. Right? It's still a very traditional village. So you see in the morning, everyone goes out, goes to the pump or the well or the pumps. And they pull the water and everyone fills up their pots and they carry them to their house. Whereas in other parts, you just turn on the tap, and if you go further up to Dangati and Radhakund and those places, they have flowing water. So you just turn on tap and you get... But there, they don't have flowing water in the houses. You have to go. So in the morning, people are carrying the pots on their heads. You know, the Mataji's, they put the pots, and they're walking along. Sometimes they have two or three pots on the head. So one devotee was giving a nice example. This is how we have to learn to think of Krishna. Just like the Mataji's in the morning, they've got the pot on their head and they're walking and there's another Mataji and she's got the pots and the kids are around playing and they're talking to each other. And they're just going, you know, what are you going to cook for breakfast? You know, do you have enough dal? I made a nice chutney yesterday, you want some chutney? But the whole time, simultaneous while they're doing that, they're thinking of the pot. Right? So they're thinking of the pot, but they're also doing their daily activities simultaneously. But they're always conscious of that pot, because if you're not conscious, the pot will fall down. So a devotee said that is the way that we have to think of Krishna. We're doing everything we do during the day. We go to the bank and we go to the store and we feed our kids and we wash our clothes and we change our bed and we iron the clothes. We're doing so many things during the day, but simultaneously, we're always thinking of Krishna. Not a pot of water on your head. So Krishna has to become like that in our mind. It's just always there. It's just always there. And then when you pass away from this body, if you're attached to him, then you go to him. He says that in the Gita. But if you are distracted or attached to this body, then it leads to another birth. And we see sometimes devotees, they take birth again. There's one Indian Mataji in England. And recently, I don't know if it was in Bhakti Godhead, but it was... Was it? It wasn't Bhakti Godhead, yeah. So in the previous life, she was a Sankirtan devotee, a Scottish brahmachari in Scotland, a brahmachari in ISKCON, ISKCON brahmachari, who died in a car crash in 1973. Right? And then what happened to that devotee? The brahmachari, ISKCON devotee, brahmachari, right? Scottish, right? Book distributor, died in a car crash. but then took birth as an Indian Mataji, who is now a devotee in England, comes to ISKCON devotee, like that. So apparently, the brahmachari was attached to one of the Indian girls who came to the temple on the Sunday feast. Right? And because attached, what did he think of? In the car accident, at the final moment, then what did the person think of? The brahmachari thought of the Indian Mataji. Right? Save me. Right? Right? His consciousness was absorbed. And then what happened? Right? And then suddenly, body, soul gets transferred into another body, into becomes a Indian Mataji. And interesting, as they show a picture, they actually look very similar. The woman he's attached to and her, the one he became, very similar, looking very, quite similar. Interesting, huh? Changes the way you think about your life. Changes what you're thinking about all day. Okay. That's why Krishna says in the Gita, what is that verse? Svapamapesha dharmasya trayate mahato mahato bayat mahabaya. Mahabaya means fear. What's the greatest fear? The greatest fear is you will take birth again. And it's easy to take birth again. It's not difficult to take birth again. You just think of the, you just take shelter in your consciousness of the wrong thing at the time of death, and you have to do it all again. Do you want to do it all again? Right? It's a lot of work. So if we learn to take shelter of Krishna at the time of death, then you will go to Krishna. But you have to be thinking of Krishna all the time. Just like Krishna's on your, just like the water pots. Right? You're just thinking of the water pots all the time. So you have to be thinking of Krishna all the time. No matter what you're doing. But Krishna is just always there. He's always there. And by that consciousness, then you will go to Krishna. That's it. That's our philosophy. So it says the backside is the fear of death. But actually Prabhupada, there's one lecture he gives. It's a famous lecture. And Prabhupada says, for the devotee there is no death. And Prabhupada said, there is no death for a devotee. There is just Krishna's service. For a non-devotee, death is very fearful. People are very scared of death. Even we're scared of death, but non-devotees are very scared of death. But Radhana Swami says, for a devotee, death is all attractive. Because death is Krishna. It means you'll be with Krishna again. So it's actually all attractive. It's not to be feared. So that is it's a very elevated state of consciousness. But the Bhagavatam is bringing us to the Paramahamsa platform, Paramahamsa Samhita, which means we're meant to come to the platform where we're not fearful of death. We're meant to come to this exalted stage of consciousness. That's why we study the Bhagavatam. It's meant to bring us to an exalted state of consciousness where we don't have any fear of death, just like Prabhupada, Abhoy Charana. Abhoy means fearless. So if we study the Bhagavatam, if we follow the process properly, then gradually we can come to this state of consciousness where we're meant to be in, where we're just focused on Krishna all the time. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there are any questions or comments. What we've discussed. You here? Yeah, I'll get to you. Just...
saying that story on the training people.
Yeah.
I wonder why is that? If we think of Krishna at your death, we will go to Krishna. But if you think of a woman here in that age, you will become a deer. Because, like, if I want to enjoy a woman, then I want to be one, right? So isn't reincarnation doing me a disservice? And then why is it different with Krishna?
I don't understand. What's the...
You were saying that he was absorbed in thinking of this Indian Mataji.
Yeah.
And then he became a woman himself.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to think of Krishna when I die, so I can go to Krishna, but not become Krishna, right?
Yeah.
And ultimately, thinking that he wanted to enjoy that Indian lady, he didn't want to actually be one, but he came again. So reincarnation can do it with a service, but it's different when you think of Krishna. So
yeah. Well, it's not that every time that you... you may think of someone in particular at the time of death, just like in that example. That's a very simple example. And in that particular circumstance, it worked very simply. He thought of a particular anatta, a particular attachment, and then virtually his consciousness became like that. But it doesn't always work like that. Because many people, just like Prabhupada said that one astrologer, there was one Indian prime minister, his name was Nehru. So one astrologer calculated where Nehru went when he left this world, and the astrologer said he became a dog in Sweden. So Prabhupada didn't say he did or he didn't, but he just said that one astrologer said he became a dog in Sweden. So he wasn't at the time of death. He wasn't thinking of a dog in Sweden. But that's what he became. So the point is he had a desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. And then according to your desire to enjoy separately and what you deserve according to your merits, your karma, then you take birth accordingly. So in some cases it's very simplistic. It's like, okay, meditate on do you become a deer? Like that. But in a lot of cases, you know, you meditate on enjoying separate ingredients, you become a dog. So it's according to your karma. It's very intricate. That's why it says the laws of material nature are very intricate. Now, it takes Yamaraj, who is empowered by Krishna, to run that part of the universe. I mean, can you imagine? You know, it says that Chitragupta has to, you know, write it all down. You know, he's in the inside of your skull, right? He's writing all of your sinful activities. Right? And then if they take you to Yamaraj, if you've been very sinful, they take you to Yamaraj and then Chitragupta grabs you and he reads in your skull. And he says, he did this and he did that and he did this and he did that and he's been writing it all. Like that. And then you're just, I mean, imagine it. There's fire everywhere and Yamaraj is actually a demigod. He's very beautiful. But when he comes out in that role, he puts on a vesh, puts on a mask. He looks like very horrific. And he's looking at you. And Chitragupta is reading, and there's fire everywhere, and he's looking at you, right? And he's saying, "What shall we do with him?" And then he has all the Yamadutas around. The Yamadutas are horrible. Like the scholars in the Bhagavatam, they're horrible. They're all running around. Some of them are grabbing you, and he's saying, "What shall we do with him? Where shall we take him?" And the Yamadutas are saying, "Take him there. Take him to that hellish planet. Burn him. Pull out his eyes. Pull out his intestines." You know, imagine you're just sitting there like, ah. So that's the hellish planet. So it's up to you where you want to go in terms of your desires, but then what you deserve that will be orchestrated by higher intelligence. So does that answer your question? Or? Yeah. Okay. Someone else put their hand? Yes, sir. I don't know. 73, I think, yeah. 74. So what's the question?
So how can you be born in such a little...
Because when you die, you go straight to your next body. Oh yeah, if you do a lot of sinful stuff, then if you go to Yamaraj, but see, in between the time that you die, say you're a very sinful person here on earth, you're a very bad person, you do a lot of bad things, you're sinful. So you die, and then in that time, between you going to your next body, which is like one moment, right, you go to Yamaloka, but you'll see if you read the Bhagavatam, the time in the universe is very different. So when you go to Yamaloka, it's almost you go to like a different dimension. And at Yamaloka, you can be there for thousands of years, suffering on all sorts of sinful, all sorts of hellish planets, suffering so much. And then when all that's finished, that's all in that moment that you were going to that, from one body to another. Then they put you back in, you go, and then you go into that next body. No, if you do devotional service, you go to Krishna. If you do good stuff, you get born on Swargaloka, you go to the heavenly planets. You go to the heavenly planets, you become a demigod. And you fly around on elephants. Really cool stuff. Demigod is very cool being a demigod. Demigods can do also. And that's why we have to become, as Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, he says you have to give up attachment to pious activities, sinful activities, and also pious activities. Because we become attached to enjoying piously, which is what the demigods do. So you have to give up attachment to both. I remember when I was a new devotee, and I was listening to Mahabharata on tape, on lecture. On tape. Someone was reading the Mahabharata. So it describes that Arjuna, there was that one year when he was in the forest. They went to the forest for 13 years. And there was one year where he was taken by Indra, his father, to the heavenly planets. And he was given weapons, celestial weapons, by different gods. Yeah, Indra gave him the thunderbolt and Shiva gave him the Pashupati weapon and like that. So he was up there. But then it describes what it was like when he was there. And I was a new devotee and I was hearing what it's like in the heavenly planets. I thought, well, it's pretty good. And I was thinking, wow, that's pretty good. And some desire was coming to my heart. Maybe I should, go to the heavenly planets. Because that desire comes to enjoy separately from Krishna. So if there's any desire, if you're pious, then you go to a better destination in this world. The only way to get to Krishna is by unalloyed devotional service. You have to become a pure devotee. You can't desire to go to the hellish planets to enjoy separately, and you can't desire to go to the heavenly planets. You have to give up attachment to do anything except serve Krishna. When you want to do nothing but serve Krishna, you go to Krishna. But if you want to play video games, you go to Silicon Valley. Right? Your next life, you don't know where you'll be born. Right? Is that okay? You understand? Because you have to read the... it's in Back to Godhead. So have a look in Back to Godhead and read it. She had memories. Sometimes you can remember things about your previous life. And then I think it was under hypnosis. They took the person back and they can do it. We can work these things out. It's possible to work out who we were in our previous life. Is it okay? How's it going? If I said it that way, that was wrong. Yeah, I didn't mean it. If I said it that way, the way you said it is correct. So, any other question? Yeah, because that's the nature of the material world. The nature of the material world is the body must suffer. Just like if you read in the Bhagavatam, there is the... when Lord Brahma is on the lotus stem in the beginning of the universe, in Canto 2 or Canto 3, then there's a celestial wind which comes and blows Brahma. Brahma's on the lotus flower. The universe isn't even created yet. Right, and he's there by himself, and this huge wind comes and starts to blow the flower, right? And he's like, it's like a distressful situation. And Prabhupada explains that that's the nature of the material world. Even if you're a pure devotee, it means the material energy still is what she is. So as long as you're in this world, you have to be overcome by difficulties and hardship. Even Prabhupada is a pure devotee, but it means Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains in the Madhurya Kanambini that a pure devotee doesn't have any karma. So when they're suffering, it's not because of karma. It's just because... Well, actually, it's to show us an example. of how we should behave when we are suffering in this world. So even Prabhupada, he was in Mauritius, or was it Kenya? It was Kenya or Mauritius. And Prabhupada was in a car accident. If you read the Leelamrita, now they drove around the corner, another car came and hit the car. So, and then someone could say, well, why would Prabhupada go through something like that? But what Krishna is showing us, that we will go through difficulties, and no matter what we go through, we need to keep our consciousness on Krishna. Just like the Pandavas went through so much difficulty. There were, so many tribulations they went through. And because they were pure devotees, they showed us that we should always stay fixed on Krishna. So if a pure devotee goes through, it's not because of karma, it's because he's teaching us an example. The material world means you have to have problems. That's the nature of the material world. Is that okay? Any other question?
Is it worship for us or generated from ears? What is significant in the ear?
The quality of the ear is that you hear.
Would it be hearing or something worse? Chemistry or something?
I don't know. I don't know. It says it could be. It could be. Atri came from one place and then Agastya and then like that. So I'm not sure. It doesn't say, Prabhupada doesn't say in the purport. But there might be some commentary where it explains. I don't know. Any other question? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.